Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you. Our first case is 082029, Mendez versus Perla Dental.
Good morning, Your Honors. For the record, my name is Marshall Burt, and I represent the defendant appellant in this case. The jury awarded the plaintiff a single punitive damage verdict in the amount of $250,000 on her retaliation discharge claim based on Title VII and the Illinois common law retaliatory discharge. The sole determining factor presented to the jury in deciding these two claims was whether the plaintiff was fired because she complained about sexual harassment. Nothing else was presented on either of those two counts. We don't challenge the Title VII verdict. What we do bring before you is whether the Illinois judgment or the Illinois retaliatory discharge judgment is void because the Illinois Human Rights Act expressly prohibits any court from adjudicating a civil rights violation that is covered by the statute.
Well, let's get right to the bottom line, and it's this. Your proposed jury instruction on the retaliatory discharge claim made clear that the claim was brought and tried based on allegations of retaliation for making a police report. At that point, then, by all agreements, the court had subject matter jurisdiction over the claim. Isn't your problem, then, that the jury instruction didn't properly instruct the jury on the relevant law?
Your Honor, I believe that when the plaintiff presented the jury instruction, it was simply based on a complaint of sexual harassment and did not include the police report that was an original claim. By doing so, it appears that they abandoned the original claim that was in their complaint and brought a claim that was neither alleged in the original complaint. And so it was a new claim over which the court never had acquired subject matter jurisdiction. The issue then is whether the plaintiff and the defendants both consented to that, and consent does not allow the court to acquire jurisdiction. But the claim is completely different from that which was originally brought. It actually mirrored the Title VII claim, and I believe that that was done in order for the parties to simply simplify the issue. And so the original claim based on the police report was never presented to the jury.
Help me with this. It seems to me that in the reply brief, the defendants attempt to belatedly argue that the jury instruction was improper. You know, asserted that the plain error standard is appropriate because the challenge wasn't raised in the district court. And the problem with that argument is that the challenge, to my knowledge, wasn't raised in this appeal either. It wasn't a part of the notice of appeal. It wasn't discussed in the opening brief. So the validity of the jury instruction that was given to the jury on the retaliatory discharge claim isn't before this court. The only claim before us is whether the court had subject matter jurisdiction over the retaliatory discharge claim. And the way I see it, you know, I don't know how my brother and sister see it, but the way I see it is that the court did. And the erroneous jury instruction didn't somehow deprive the court of that jurisdiction.
Your Honor, in answer to your points there, first of all, I don't believe that the jury instruction that was submitted was an erroneous statement of the law. It was clearly based on a claim under Title VII as well as a claim under the Illinois Human Rights Act in that you cannot fire a person for complaining about sexual harassment, and that was a clear statement of the law. The way we see it is that that claim, however, was in the wrong form. It should have been brought before the Illinois Human Rights Commission. If, however, the jury instruction was erroneous, then I think the appellees brought that issue before the court by arguing that it was clearly, if it was erroneous, it did not affect the substantive right of the parties. And the instruction was clearly erroneous in that it missed a essential element of the claim, which was filing the police report. And they argue at length that it did not affect a substantive right of the party because the evidence in the case supported the retaliatory discharge claim that was alleged in the complaint. However, the jury instruction did not include the police report, so any evidence with respect to the filing of the police report became irrelevant because it was not used by the jury to make its finding. So the way we see it is that either the court did not have jurisdiction because the original claim was abandoned, or the plaintiff raised the issue of whether there was clear error, and there was clearly error there, and two, it affected substantive rights of the party because it included a claim that was never alleged. It included a claim that the court arguably did not have jurisdiction over, and it included a claim which actually usurped the authority of the Illinois Human Rights Act.
Let me get an answer to the one of the questions. I know there were a lot of questions in there, so it's hard to maybe follow. But again, in your reply brief, you argued that reversal is required because the jury instruction constituted plain error. But where in your opening brief did you raise a challenge to the jury instruction?
That was not in our opening brief, Your Honor, but that was raised by the appellee in their brief, and they clearly addressed the plain error issue.
It needed to be in your brief, did it not, for us to be able to have that claim before us?
Well, I think that by them raising it in their brief also gives the court an opportunity to reverse on the basis of plain error because they have the opportunity to raise the issue, which they did, and the issue was thoroughly flushed out by the court or to the court. And so if the court does finds that they did not abandon their original claim, the jury instruction was certainly erroneous, which would justify reversal, even based on their argument, because they don't challenge that it was erroneous. They just focus on whether it was involved in substantial rights of the parties, which it clearly did. But we are viewing the case more in terms of it was a different claim in which the court never had jurisdiction over, because it was never one that was alleged in the original complaint, and it was one that was presented to the jury that the court never acquired jurisdiction over. So it's not an issue of the court losing jurisdiction. It's a brand new claim that was based on Title VII.
No. I think there's another fundamental problem with your argument here, which is that to the extent that this is a jurisdictional argument, jurisdiction is evaluated as of the time of the complaint, and the sort of retaliatory discharge claim that was pleaded in the complaint, the common law one, not the Title VII one, was appropriate and didn't raise any jurisdictional questions because it was a common law retaliatory discharge claim based on the filing of the police report, not based on retaliation for alleging sexual harassment. So there was no jurisdictional problem under the Illinois Human Rights Act as the claim was originally pleaded. There is an instructional error argument kicking around here, but the instructional error that was committed by the court was not something that anybody objected to at the time. And so we have a very steep standard of review, kind of a hurdle to get over here to give anybody any relief. And actually, it ended up working in your favor, I think, or at least in one sense it worked in your favor. because of the way the case was submitted to the jury. The jury didn't consider the issue of whether the plaintiff was retaliated against for filing a police report.
I understand that, Your Honor. And the problem, though, is that because the jury did not consider that, that was not the same claim that was presented. It was, although it
what was presented,
labeled,
it was in evidence, right? All of the evidence about the filing of the police report was part of the trial, and it was part of the claims that were pleaded in this case. It's just that
and
there
that
was
evidence,
an instructional error.
There was a lot of evidence presented in the case, and I wasn't the trial counsel there, but the evidence, however, could have gone to the emotional distress claim. It could have gone to the harassment claim. It could have gone to a lot of claims. But what the jury was specifically instructed on was that the only thing they were to consider on the retaliatory discharge claim was whether she was fired for filing a police report. And so all the evidence in the case that is being cited by the plaintiff here becomes irrelevant when the only issue that the jury was deciding was whether she was fired for filing a whether she was fired for making a complaint of sexual harassment.
Why don't you address to the extent that this is solely an instructional error and not a jurisdictional issue, your standard of review is very steep to get relief because you didn't object to the way the jury was instructed.
Right. Under 51.2D or D2, you are allowed to review it and reverse it if it affects substantial rights. And I believe it did affect substantial rights because the jury decided a claim that was not alleged in the original complaint because it was missing that element. Your Honor, I see I'm in my rebuttal time. If you have any questions right now, I can try and answer them, or I can answer them when I return. Thank you.
Mr. Burt. So, Ms. Slepper?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Heidi Carr Sleeper, and I represent the appellee, Nerita Mendez.
You pronounce your name Sleeper?
It is pronounced Sleeper, yes, Your Honor.
You have to put the extra E in.
I know. It's my husband's name. Blame him. Defendant's appeal in this matter is not about subject matter jurisdiction. The defendants are asking this Court to reverse the verdict that a jury awarded Ms. Mendez 3 years ago by recasting the argument in the one thing that they couldn't waive, subject matter jurisdiction. And Your Honor's correct that subject matter jurisdiction in this case attached at the time of the pleadings. The plaintiff pled in her complaint, presented at trial, and argued in closing that she was retaliated against for filing a police report. Dr. Alderi, the owner of the defendant's company, stated to the plaintiff, "Who do you think you are bringing the police into this office? You're fired," and escorted her to the door. This is a classic retaliatory discharge claim under Illinois law that the court had jurisdiction over throughout the trial and throughout the 3 years that the case was litigated.
Ms. Sleeper, tell me this. Would you concede that if you had only brought a claim alleging retaliation because Ms. Mendez complained about sexual harassment, then the district court would not have had subject matter jurisdiction over that claim?
Yes, if that was the only claim that was brought. In this case, the claim that was brought was that she filed a police report based on the assault. And in that case, it's not inextricably linked to the Illinois Human Rights Act. Therefore, the district court did have jurisdiction over it. As we've discussed, the jurisdiction attaches at the time of the pleading and cannot be lost by the jury instructions, as the defendants try to argue here.
What kind of a jury instruction did you ask for on count 5, which is the common law retaliatory discharge? How did it read?
The plaintiff's instruction was very basic. The plaintiff's proposed instruction is at record at docket 70. Says, on plaintiff's claims of retaliatory discharge under Illinois law, your verdict must be for plaintiff Nerita Mendez and against the defendants if the plaintiff has proven by the evidence the following elements. plaintiff was terminated, and whether defendants terminated plaintiff because she engaged in protected conduct. Very basic. The defendant's proposed instruction was that she was terminated in retaliation for making a police report. The instruction that we ended up with in the case was proposed by the judge, and all parties agreed to.
I assume that there are pattern jury instructions in Illinois for the common law claim of retaliatory discharge, the public policy exception to at-will employment?
There is.
And it probably doesn't read the way that you asked the court to instruct the jury, or I doubt that it reads that way. It's probably much more detailed.
The court, when it proposed its jury instruction, relied on the Illinois pattern instructions, as well as Hartling versus Illinois Power Company, setting out the elements that the party was discharged in retaliation for the employee's activities and that the discharge violates a clear mandate of public policy.
That's the instruction that...
That's the case law that the judge relied on in...
But that's
making,
not the instruction that the
instruction.
Judge gave.
I actually did not grab the pattern instruction. I don't have that before me.
The judge instructed the jury as if this were a duplicate or an essential duplicate of the Title VII retaliation claim, right?
The focus of the jury instruction that the parties agreed to was on her complaints. In this case, there was evidence of many complaints that were presented to the jury. The complaint to the police department was the basis of plaintiff's retaliatory discharge claim as she pled it in her complaint. There was also the complaints to management at the company as well regarding the assault, sexual harassment, and other issues. So the parties focused on the language of the complaint and that the protected activity was that she complained.
What was the defendant's proposed instruction?
The defendant's proposed instruction was that plaintiff complains that her employment was terminated by defendants in retaliation for making a police report against Dr. Waleed Dejani. To succeed on this claim, plaintiff must prove, by a preponderance of the evidence, that she was terminated in retaliation for engaging in this conduct and that her discharge violated a clearly mandated Illinois public policy. For conduct to be...
That's the instruction you would want.
That's
the one they didn't use.
In hindsight, that sounds like it would
be
okay.
No, that hindsight isn't good enough. I was perplexed when you read that. That there's exactly the instruction that isn't there. And whatever the judge did to consolidate or to revamp, as Judge Sykes points out, it ends up as having two basically redundant instructions for the sexual harassment, which, of course, with all we've read here, is pretty bad. No question. They're not challenging that, but you have this ceiling to deal with. And that instruction that was not included is exactly the problem, at least the way I see it.
And I believe the judge in this case was trying to simplify the issue. There's no question that the facts of this case involved not only sexual harassment, but also this incident where she was assaulted.
Yeah.
And the judge was trying to simplify that for the jury. The evidence that was presented for the jury and that the judge instructed the jury to consider was all of the evidence presented at trial, including the fact that she was assaulted by being shoved to the ground, which has nothing to do with the sexual harassment issues, and that she filed a police report.
There's no question that the factual basis for the Illinois common law tort claim of retaliatory discharge was in the case. The problem is that it wasn't correctly submitted to the jury by the court with the proper elements of the claim under Illinois law. And those elements would have included that she engaged in conduct that was protected as a matter of Illinois public policy, that is to say the filing of the police report, the complaint with the police about the assault and battery. That's the instruction that the jury needed to hear in order to properly evaluate this claim, because it was a distinct claim from the Title VII retaliation case, and to the extent that it was coextensive with it and just consisted of retaliation for complaining about sexual harassment, it was preempted by the Illinois Human Rights Act, and you don't get punitive damages, etc. So I mean, there's a real problem here, and both sides are complicit in it, because nobody, well, the defense asked for the right instruction and then didn't object when it wasn't given, which maybe they should be, you know, made to live with that decision. You didn't ask for the right instruction either, and the judge didn't give the right instruction, so the claim was mistried. If that's the wrong word, it was tried on an improper legal basis.
And the defendant didn't object to the jury instruction. In fact, they agreed to it, which brings us to the question of whether there was an error in the jury instruction.
There's no question that there was an error in the jury instruction. Let's just agree about
that. Take it on faith.
Absolutely. Yeah. But since the defendants didn't object to that jury instruction and, in fact, agreed to it, they've waived it for purposes of appeal. So the only thing that...
It's not a waiver. It just heightens the standard of review.
Right. It's
a steep standard of review. So maybe you want to start talking about that.
Right. And so in this case, there'd have to be plain error in order for there to be a reversal. There's not plain error in this case because in order to have that, you must show that the verdict would not have been substantially the same. In this case, they can't do that. The record contains the facts necessary for the jury to find for plaintiff on a retaliatory discharge claim. The jury found for the plaintiff on all of her counts, including the other retaliation claims, and the jury found that the defendant's conduct was so egregious as to award punitive damages. The district court affirmed that punitive damages result, saying that this case involved a series of deliberate reprehensible acts. The degree of reprehensibility evidenced in the record certainly justifies the award of punitive damages.
What was the defense on this claim and the others? That this stuff didn't happen, that there was no causation? What was the nature of the defense?
I believe the nature of the defense in this claim was that she was fired because of they felt that she was threatening the workplace.
Okay, so that there was no causal connection was essentially the focus of the defense?
Yes.
Between her termination
Yes.
Okay.
Which, in this case,
the
given
jury
the fact,
obviously rejected.
The jury rejected, and the fact that the defendant said, you know, who are you for filing a police report, bringing the police into my office, and immediately fired her and escorted her out the door, the jury was reasonable in their finding.
So it was a feeble defense?
Yes.
Which bears upon the standard of review?
Yes. Again, in this case, the plaintiff argued throughout the entire trial, from the beginning of the case when she pled in her complaint, throughout trial and in closing arguments to the jury, that the plaintiff was fired in retaliation for filing a police report. Therefore, the court had subject matter jurisdiction over the claim. And the only question then becomes, was the jury instruction proper? And if not, was the defendant so prejudiced by this as to change the result of the trial? In which case, we believe that the district court and the jury was proper in their findings on all of the counts and on finding punitive damages. And therefore, the verdict would not change given a different instruction. Browners, have any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
We ask that the district court judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Burt, you have 3 minutes left.
Thank you. Your Honor, it's clear that the defendants did present the correct jury instruction, and for whatever reason, that was not accepted either by the plaintiff or the court.
But and you did not object at that time.
I believe.
I mean, not you, but whoever was sitting there.
My suspicion is, and I would just be speculating, they did not object because they just viewed it as simplifying the case, so it would go in and be presented to the jury as a simple retaliation claim based on complaining about sexual harassment, similar to the Title VII. I don't know how it got to that, but that's how it got there, and that's what the jury decided. And it was wrong, and it was wrong. And it was both the plaintiff's fault as well as the defendant's fault because they had the jury.
But is it a miscarriage of justice?
I'm sorry.
But was it a miscarriage of justice that the jury didn't get this instruction?
Because it was a miscarriage of justice, Your Honor, because the jury decided a claim that was not presented in the complaint.
The evidence was in the case.
And for
and
the
abundant,
plaintiffs
apparently.
To say that the jury would have decided that had the correct instruction been presented is purely speculative.
Well, it isn't speculative, or whatever that word is, because the jury had all the evidence in front of it.
They did have all the evidence, but the only thing that they were to decide on the title on the retaliatory discharge claim was whether she was fired for complaining about sexual harassment. We don't know how the jury would have decided whether she was fired because of the filing of the police report.
Now, why don't we know that?
Because it was not presented to the jury as part of the jury instruction.
And which whose fault was that?
I would say it's the defendant's fault, it's the plaintiff's fault, and it's the court's fault.
Why would it be the plaintiff's fault?
Because it's their claim.
But why would they help you in that way? Maybe they knew exactly what was happening. They didn't want to upset the judge, and they knew that, you know, the evidence was in.
And then the plaintiffs would be culpable in submitting a wrong jury instruction, which was not based on the claim that was alleged in her complaint. And that actually supports the issue that they abandoned that original claim in favor of a claim that mirrored Title VII.
You all agreed to that claim.
You're right, Your Honor. I can't dispute that, they all agreed to it.
But that's our problem.
And so what we would have there is either they consented to a claim that the court didn't have jurisdiction over, and you can't consent to that, or two, they consented to an improper jury instruction which did not contain the material element of the original claim. And so the original claim alleged in the complaint was never decided by the jury.
Somebody has to take the fall for that.
And we believe it should be the plaintiff.
So you want a new trial on that claim?
Yes, we do.
But the evidence on that claim is overwhelming.
It may be overwhelming, Your Honor, but again...
She was fired immediately after filing the police report, and there's direct evidence linking the termination to that evidence from the mouth of her boss, right?
But we don't know what the damages the jury would have awarded on that. They could have thought, well, the big issue was the sexual harassment, which they found, that she was fired for sexual harassment, and this other issue about filing the police report was probably more tangential. And so the punitive damages are more on the Title VII than on the common law claim. So we don't know what the damages actually would have been.
It could be higher, you know.
Right.
If you go back, could very well be a lot higher.
And punitives on a common law claim aren't capped.
Yeah. Or they very well could be a lot lower. But again, we would be speculating on what would happen because the correct jury instruction was not submitted. And so, to sum up, Your Honor, we ask that either the judgment be reversed and remanded because of an improper jury instruction, or that the claim be vacated, or the verdict be vacated because of lack of jurisdiction. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.